All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Friday, January 24th of 2025, and looking ahead here, we have a four-game NHL slate as well as a three-game NBA main slate, so it should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions. Get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel and our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there's a link in the description of this video. You also get access to more similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim teams. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show tomorrow on Saturdays. I'm actually changing the show for tomorrow. It's typically 12:30 p.m. Eastern. I need to make it 11:30 a.m. Eastern, so I will make that update here for like the stream schedule, but going to move it up an hour tomorrow. And then it is Friday, so we do have our build review show at 5 p.m. Eastern. Have a big queue of people signed up today, so it should be a nice, fun build review show. All right. Let's get SaberSim up, and let's start jumping into some questions. We had a couple questions come in the Discord ahead of time. We will start with those and then answer any questions that roll in live. All right. First question, quick question. I play FanDuel, and I've been trying to play within the profit plan, playing a mixture of single entry, 30 max, 25 max, 150 max. Keep noticing that I end up with not very much diversity with my limited 3 max and 25 max lineups, usually playing only a few lineups in each. For example, I had Johnson from Atlanta in all of my 3 max and 25 max lineups. I guess my question is, is there any way I should do my builds to make sure these lineups are more diversified? I use many uniques when doing my builds, but I get concerned if my ROI jumps too low when using more uniques. Just wondering if you have any other recommendations. For sure. So sometimes, you know, one thing I see, right, is let's do this. So we're going to do 150 max contest sim. We're going to do 20 max sim. And then we're going to do a 3 max sim. All right, let's go back to the main. We will just build 5,000 lineups. Should be fine because we're doing 150 max here. So want to have a little bit bigger pool to work with initially. So let's let these 5K lineups run. All right, lineups are finishing up now. I'm going to click Run Contest Sim. So the big thing, right, to consider here is, I don't know exactly how you're doing this, but if one way that, you know, I think is like pretty common is to like use the same min unique number across all your contests. So like you would go into autofill, you would set your min unique number via the gear icon in the min unique setting. And like, let's say you set it to 3 for all your contests, right? Well, for your like 20 max and 3 max compared to the 150, those can be like way more diverse, right? So I'm just going to like show what I mean here. So let's say we're doing the 150 max first. All right, let's say I need 150 lineups. And then I'm going to switch to the 150 max, right? And this would be the same on FanDuel. You could do it, you know, for whatever contest you're playing. So here, right, I have 150 lineups. I'm on one unique. I'm going to, you know, let's just note my ROI, right? 175. So then let's go up to like 3. ROI goes down to like 155, right? Well, let's say like you know, you don't really want to go any further than that. You're like, you know what? 3 is kind of like the max for me. Okay, that's fine. But you shouldn't use 3 for your other contests, right? And we could see that, right? If we go here, we're going to set this back to 1. So for 150, we use three, right? Big thing to remember. Okay, now let's do 20 lineups. Let's change the contest sims to the 20 max. And then let's change aggregate metric to the 20 max as well. All right. We go to three, it's at 192, but you notice here, right, these players are a lot more leveraged. When we had three uniques for the 150 max, we didn't have anybody with leverage over 20%. But for the 20 maxes, we do, right? So in this case, you know, it can be a good idea to go a little bit further with them in uniques just to lower your leverages to some of these top plays, even if you're sacrificing some projection, even if you're sacrificing some ROI, right? That's okay. So like here I'm at four uniques. My top leverage is, you know, 38%, which is still a lot, but that's like double one of the best value plays on the slate. And then, you know, if we go back to that 150 example, right? 150. Because I didn't call this out when we were walking through it. Something's wrong here. Okay, there we go. So we were at three uniques, right? In our 150 set with three uniques, you know, our highest leverage is like 15%, right? So leverage is like way smoothed out across the 150. You might need to be more aggressive in your other contests in order to, you know, not be so concentrated, right? And you could see this doing it one by one. So this is why, like, typically I'll recommend scaling your uniques. Like, okay, for 150, I use three. But then for my 20 max, I used four or something like that, right? And then even if I sacrifice, you know, some more projection, even if I sacrifice a little more ROI, this will get you more spread out, right? And then we go do the three max, right? We go to the three max. Go to the three max. Change the lineups to three. Change uniques to one. Okay, here, right? 70% ROI. Let's start with four uniques. ROI, you know, has changed like 1%, right? Okay, well, you know, we could probably go to five. Okay, we can probably go to six. You know, ROI is down like 5% and we're at six uniques, right? This is way more spread out than all the other contests here, right? So this is even beyond like scaling, like 3, 4, 5. I would go like 3, 4, 7. You know, 7 ends up being like a pretty good number in my opinion, right? So this is you could take the time like to do this for, you know, all your like different sections. If you have, you know, a 25 max and a 20 max, do it for the 25. Use the same number. If like the number of entries are close, it's like fine. Like, okay, use the same number for your 5 max and your 3 max. Use the same number for your 20 max and your 25 max, right? But do this like for all of the big jumps, right? 150 to 25 is massive. 25 to 3, that's another big jump, right? So that's the way I'd be thinking about it. But it sounds like you might need to be more aggressive with the uniques for the smaller entry contests. And you could do this exercise every single day where like you're going to go and pick a contest that is like representative for like that entry limit, you know, plus or minus however many entries, and then use that min unique number, right? Or you could just kind of get in a rhythm and just be like, okay, you know, one more unique ends up being like pretty good. You know, I ended up doing that just because I've done it so many times where it's like, sometimes I'm in a time crunch. Sometimes, you know, news breaks late and I don't have time to like go through every time and do this. So you can cut some corners if you want and maybe you jump, right? Maybe you go like 3, 4, 6, right? I don't know, but there's a couple different ways you could do it. I think all of them are viable. So figure out which one works the best for you. But I think something like this, And then it just allows you to put eyes right on the exposures, on the leverages for the different sizes, where you can figure out, hey, do I want to go further, right? How much further do I want to go? So think about it like that. But I think that should help you not be so concentrated in some of your smaller entry contests. All right, good stuff there. Next question. I wanted to ask for some clarification regarding the unique settings in late swap. If your initial build has three uniques, do you maintain that number when performing a late swap, or do you adjust it given that games have already started? Given that games have already started and there may be a few, maybe fewer spots available in the lineups. Thanks so much for your help. Okay. Good question. So, typically what I've found is that maintaining it ends up being fine. You know, if you start off with three uniques and not a lot changes, you know, it's totally okay to like stay at three uniques in your late swaps. Optimal strategy is to redo this exercise we're talking about. This exercise is like so important, okay? And you could do this in late swap, right? Where effectively what you do is you're an autofill, you know, I would just change your uniques down to one. And then you're going to have your aggregate metrics, right? What you're going to do is in autofill, there's going to be an apply button next to save to contest. So you're going to change the uniques. You're going to apply it. You're going to see the impact in your aggregate metrics. And then you can change it. You can reapply, which is this processing is doing, and then see the changes again, right? And then you just keep going until, you know, they move, you know, so much, right? Typically what I found is that if you start with a number, you know, your uniqueness gets locked into your lineups as games continue to start. So it ends up being pretty easy to get to a similar ROI at a similar number of uniques if you keep maintaining that throughout the slate. So I found that to work pretty well. Sometimes it can drop, you know, maybe, and then maybe, you know, in that case you go from three to two, right? The process of like changing uniques, applying, looking at metrics is honestly really fast, right? And you can just do that as many times as you need to, even checking exposures after the fact and figuring out, okay, when do I actually want to save these and download them, right? That process ends up going like pretty fast. So I would just do it, and then But typically what I found is like you typically end up in a similar spot. So, you know, that is the right answer, like to check every time. But if you just want to roll with what you had at the beginning, I think that's okay. All right. Good stuff there. Next question from Phil. Phil said, can you discuss if/how to late swap lineups where ROI change is greater than X, or how should I think about the ROI change more generally when using late swap? We did have like another question around late swap. It is, you know, I wish that, you know, there was like some slate in progress. You know, it was always nice, like when we did football, right, where it's like Thursday to Monday or like Monday to Thursday, and like we could like late swap, you know, throughout the week, right? You know, no like multi-day slate in progress that I'm playing, right? I'm not playing League of Legends or anything where they have like multi-day, unfortunately. But as far as like ROI change, right? You know, the reason ROIs are changing are based on two things, right? New sims for upcoming games, and then how the players are performing in the games that are going on, right? Now, it's going to kind of depend on like what kind of player you are here. I'm not somebody setting a lot of minimax exposures, right? Pretty hands off there. You know, if we are, you know, if the builder likes one player at slate start and then they decide to change based on, you know, updated projections, how my lineups are doing, you know, that doesn't really bother me, right? I didn't really feel too strongly about it in the first place, right? But some people feel different, right? They're like, hey, you know, I want to get to like X percent of, you know, so-and-so. And when I run the late swap and I have my exposures applied, you know, my ROI goes down. And you know, if that's you, right, you got to decide what's more important for you. Is maintaining your exposure is more important, or is maintaining the SaberSim ROI more important, right? Sometimes, you know, people are going to be good at those things, right? People are going to be good at identifying plays to get exposure to. And in that case, I would say it is okay to sacrifice, you know, SaberSim pre-slate ROI in order to get to the plays that you've identified to be good, right? You're adding value. And yeah, you might be artificially trading, you know, or trading some like artificial ROI, but you know, you've done it enough times, you know, hopefully you're tracking yourself and being objective in like, you know, how often you're right, that, you know, you've come to the conclusion that like, hey, no, this is a good thing to do and I should continue to do so, right? So just depends how like convicted you are in some of those changes. But, you know, ROI is going to fluctuate throughout a slate depending on how players are doing. It can honestly fluctuate like a lot more than people think. You know, I've had lineups where, you know, say it's like a Monday to Thursday, like two game slate, right? And like, maybe I just like nail the Monday slate, right? Like I've had lineups that are like 26,000%, you know, expected ROI, and the players in like the Thursday game that I need just like end up breaking, right? And it doesn't end up working out that good. That happens, you know? So actual performance can, you know, sway actual results, you know, as far as like ROI percentages and stuff go. I think you just take, you know, in my opinion, you know, you just kind of always take what the highest swaps are. If you're a hands-off player, you know, take the highest swaps and hope things start to go your way. And, you know, I've seen, you know, my portfolio EV, like say, you know, the third game locks, right? And I come in and I, you know, and I go and I look at like my portfolio EV and, you know, maybe my EV is low, right? Maybe my EV is like negative. Like I've gone from like negative $50 EV to like positive $2,000 EV, like by like the third quarter of like the last game. Like sometimes slates just play out that way, but I think that the ROI swings are like a little bit greater throughout as slates go on than maybe people think. And I wouldn't, you know, be overly concerned. I'm mostly just trying to take the highest swaps available. All right. Next question. Does projected ownership change / become more accurate during late swap? Okay. So the answer to this question is different for FanDuel versus DraftKings. Okay. So what happens here, right? So the reason it's different between the two sites is because we can download the actual ownership for contests on DraftKings while the contests are in progress, but we cannot do that for FanDuel, right? So effectively what happens for FanDuel is projected ownership gets locked in place once a game starts, and then we can rebuild ownership for any games that have not started, okay? So imagine, I don't know, Ja Morant gets ruled out after lock. So the first two games, their ownership's going to stick. And then for the last game, you know, now that Morant's out, his ownership is, you know, going to go to zero. And then all that ownership gets redistributed amongst the players in the last game. Okay, so that's what happens for FanDuel. DraftKings, you know, let's say that we have LaMelo Ball projected for 22% ownership, and he ends up coming in projected, or his actual ownership ends up being 28%, okay? So we actually see that 28 number, and then we pull it into our ownership. We're like, hey, you know, LaMelo ended up being 28% owned. DeAndre Ayton ended up being, you know, 18% owned, whatever, right? All the players that have locked, we see their actual ownership, and then we use that to rebuild the rest of the ownership for the rest of the slate. So our DraftKings live ownership is going to be more accurate than our FanDuel ownership is going to be, just because we have those actual data points and we can, you know, the picture becomes clearer as the slate goes on, right? Like ownership is like a puzzle. DraftKings is literally giving us the puzzle pieces, right? Like this is the exact puzzle piece. This is the exact puzzle piece, and we're fitting them in, and then we're seeing the picture more clearly, right? With FanDuel, we don't have like those. But to just come full circle, you know, does projected ownership change has to become more accurate during late swap? The answer is yes, because we're constantly updating. And then for DraftKings, we're using the actual ownership. So there's you know, only so much ownership that can go around, right? You're looking at like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 positions. You know, multiply that by 100. There is 800% ownership available on the slate. And as more and more of it gets revealed, you know, what is left to go around becomes kind of easier because there's not so many options. All right. Next question. And do exposures during late swap change based on how each of your lineups is performing? You're doing well, so it gives you the higher projected chalk guy, or if you're not, it gives you the lower owned guy. You know, I know this is like kind of a common like knowledge a little bit, or like a common, commonly like accepted idea. I've actually, you know, seen a little bit of something a little bit different happening, you know, with some of even my lineups, right? Where maybe I don't get off to the best start. You know, sometimes your lineups can maintain a higher cashing rate or a higher ROI through a higher cashing rate as opposed to jamming in low-owned players. So, an example, right? I had a lineup last weekend, and I was it was the Saturday to Sunday NFL slate. And I had like one high stakes lineup, and I was at a point where I had three roster spots left, and my lineup had done okay, but it wasn't doing great, right? So my two highest swap options, one of them was Puka Nacua, Khalil Shakir, and Saquon Barkley. This was the top ranked one, okay? My other one was AJ Brown, Cooper Kupp, and Saquon Barkley. The differences here were that Nacua was like 30% projected ownership, Shakir was like 20% projected, and then Barkley was like 40-something projected, right? That lineup had like a 44% cash rate, but a 0% win rate, with like a 18% ROI or something like that. Excuse me. This one had a 14% cash rate, so 30% cashing difference, but it had a 0.02% win rate. So what happens here, right? I have these two options. Option one cashes a lot more because even though they're chalky, you know, I mean, Nacua is still in only 30% of lineups. Like, okay, yeah, he's chalky, but there's still 70% of the field not playing him. Shakir, like 20% owned, right? Barkley, 40%. I think like when you put these guys together, there aren't that many combinations of lineups that have like all of them together. Might be some, but that 44% win rate was outranking the 44% cash rate was outranking the 14% cash rate with the 0.02% win rate. So, you know, I just wanted to mention that because, like, I've talked to people in, like, sport where it's like, hey, you know, my lineup didn't do good and SaberSim isn't putting in low-owned guys. Like, something's wrong. Well, you know, I spent, like, a good amount of time, like, analyzing the lineup because I think Kupp was, like, single-digit ownership. AJ Brown was single digit ownership, and then Barkley had like a lot of ownership, right? So like Barkley was the same in both, but I was going from like two, you know, 20, 30% owned wide receivers to like two single digit wide receivers. And although the ROIs were similar, you know, even though the other one won some amount of the time, the one with Brown and Kupp, the one that with Nacua and Shakir cashed so much more that even though it didn't win, you know, it still outpaced the, you know, more of like a longer shot lineup. So in just come back to the question, you know, in late swap, your exposures will change, but the builder is like optimizing for the, you know, highest ROI outcome. And sometimes, you know, playing guys who are good value, playing guys who get there often, right, still ends up being higher ROI than like punt plays or things like that, at least from like what I've seen. Smith said, thanks for your time, plus for the specific example. So which option did SaberSim give you? Puka Shakir, I assume. Yeah, that was the top one, and that was the one I ended up going with. So that ended up working out. You know, did okay in that contest. Luckily, both had Barkley, so I was kind of safe there either way. But yeah, so Puka Shakir ended up being the highest, and I rolled with that one. All right. Good stuff so far. And just jumping to office hours real quick. Okay, cool. So there was a question from Ryan, and I needed a little bit of clarification, and he got back to me, so we can talk about this one now. Spiz said, thanks, bud. You are welcome. Let's get Ryan's question in here. Cause I was just like a little confused about it at first. All right. Ryan said, can you go over swapping in NBA? When I limit the amount of times I swap, the lineups seem to do better. And then I asked for a little bit of clarification here. Got back to me with not swapping at every start time and just swapping if you have big injury or big starting lineup change. I think this is a fine way to swap. I don't think you need to swap at every window. Okay. So like, let's just assume, right, 3-game slate. Two games at lock, one game an hour later. Let's just assume the middle game, this Cleveland-Philly game, is at 4:30 Pacific time, right? So it would be like 4 o'clock, 4:35, with 30-minute intervals between each one. You know, by the time the first game starts, right, locks at 4, tip-off is usually 10 minutes after, and by the time you have to do your swap, you know, maybe 4:20, if you're really good, maybe like 4:25, you know, how much of the game has like actually played, and you know, how has that actually affected projections, right? Basketball is a little bit different than other sports, maybe like MLB. You know, in MLB, right, Vlad Jr. comes up first inning, you know, hits a home run. That has a big impact on his projection, right? He's gone from, you know, I don't know, like a 9-point projection to 14% or 14 actual points. And he still has, you know, 3 at bats left or something, right? You know, you're not going to see these like, you know, basketball, you know, you're not going to score like 15 points in like one shot, right? Basketball is like very incremental. So you kind of need more of the game to play out in order to get some actionable information from it, right? So I think it's totally fine to not swap at every window. If you just want to like, hey, I'm just going to, you know, keep my eye on Discord. And like when the lineups are the same, I'm not going to change. When there's no significant projection changes, I'm not going to change. And I'm only going to change when starting lineups are different or projections move a lot for players, right? I think that's a totally fine approach. Definitely take some of like the burden off of like always having to, you know, have your computer close by. Always having to be on your phone and swapping, right? So I like that approach. I think it's totally fine. I don't think you're sacrificing a ton by doing that. So if that works for you, I would totally keep doing it. All right. Good stuff there. Looks like we are all caught up here. So appreciate everybody tuning in. I'll be back in about 30 minutes for our build review show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.